Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast. We're hosted by Kendall and Jackie. And here we talk about everything, well, horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and also the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, the tropes, and new episodes are launched every Monday.
And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Terra Nova Pod. And more importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo.
Yer.
Oh my god.
I had to do it.
The true calling of a true New Yorker.
The true call, and I had to do it. It's New York in the building. New York born and raised, but we also get to cover a New York movie today, but we'll get into that. How you doing, Jackie?
I'm good, dead ass.
Same here. I'm doing real good. I'm doing real good. You know, straight facts all day. Every day. You guys are wondering what we're talking New York, or more New York than usual. Anyway, because we both from New York, we're talking more New York than usual. It's because this week we're reviewing the film Vampires versus the Bronx.
I love this movie. Like, I cannot stress it. Like, oh my god. Like, yo. Like, again. Kendall was like stressing for this movie. You have no idea how long he's been stressing. He's like, you gotta watch it. We gotta review it.
Yes.
And I was just like, okay, I'm gonna watch it. Yo, I fell in love with it. I was like, oh my god, this is a movie I needed in my life.
Yeah, I'm so happy you felt that way. I was like, man, I don't see how you could not like this movie unless you're not in for the jokes. Cause I came ready for the laughs from the moment I saw the title. I didn't even notice this film was like coming out or anything. I think a friend randomly told me about it. Because the movie's still fairly new. It came out a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But I remember a friend told me about it. He was like, oh, here's a trailer. I was like, I don't need a trailer. They got me. I'm going to watch it. It was like vampires fighting people in the Bronx like this. It can't get more New York than this. Like, this is going to be great. This is going to be legendary.
Oh, I loved it. I loved everything about it. First things first. I mean, do we even have to ask? Like... our take on it, like if we like it or not, like do we even have to ask? I mean,
yeah, go for it, we can do it.
10 Tims up for this movie, just saying.
10 pairs of Tims.
Yes.
What kind of Tims we going with though? You going with the original Tims, or you going with some beef and broccolis? Like, what kind of Tims?
And for suede, I used to own suede Tims back in the day. And what about you? How do you rate this movie?
I feel like this film is the year that was heard around the world. Like, Harry? Like, this movie was so New York, it couldn't help itself. But I loved it. That was what got me in. That's what pulled me in from the moment it came on. The moment it popped up and I even heard it was a thing. I was like, yep. I already know what this is about to be. All the memes, all the jokes about New York, everything about to come full circle. I already know. It's going to be a good time.
Oh god, that's what I loved about it too. Like, again, I love how like we could always like make fun of ourselves. Like, that's the one thing I love about being like, I mean, because I'm from Brooklyn, born and raised in Brooklyn, we could make fun of ourselves. like we could just go straight in. But oh, I freaking love this movie.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably one of my favorite things about being a New Yorker too. Like, you don't mind the jokes, like all the jokes about Tim's, all the jokes about seeing Deadass, all of that stuff, my guy, all of those things. When those memes kind of really started popping up crazy on like Facebook and everything a few years back, everyone I know kind of just laughed at it. We were just like, yeah, that's New York. That's New York through and through. Like, we're not hiding that. That's what it is. Wear bubble coats and Tim's, like, that's New York.
Even though I hate bubble coats, man, they're a pain in the ass carry around. You gotta carry that shit in high school. I had to carry that everywhere. It's just like, oh my god, you gotta wear like extra layers because it'd be mad brick.
Yeah, it was brick ass outside.
Anything everywhere else? Oh my god, yo.
Yeah, New York weather is something else. They show us a good time of year to shoot this film because New York weather, them summers get brutal. Even the falls, I mean, the winters get brutal. The summers get brutal too, but the winters get rough here. The falls get kind of rough. They almost feel like winter at times. So they chose a nice, like, it seemed like fallish, almost like summertime where they kind of shot the film.
Yeah. And summer, yo, I guys don't know. I mean, if you guys are listening, you guys are from New York, you know how summer is over here. It is crazy. It'd be hot as hell. That I'm just like, I just want to stay indoors and that's it. I don't want to go out. If I go out, just one step, I'm sweating already. I'm sweating.
Yeah, New York summers are one of a kind.
But yeah, so this movie, Vampires vs. the Bronx, as the title says, it's set in the Bronx.
Boogie down.
And
yeah, I'll go through the quick synopsis. Okay. Right here. I'll see what the film is about. Whether you've seen the film or not, I know it's pretty new. Obviously, this ain't the podcast to avoid spoilers. So if you're tuning in before watching it, I hope you don't mind spoilers because we're going to get into it. But the summary of the film as a whole takes place in the Bronx. The lead character, Miguel.
Little Mayor.
Yeah, Little Mayor, as people call him, or Kid Mayor. He's like a really well-known kid in the neighborhood. You know, that's just how it is. You grew up in these neighborhoods. Everybody kind of knows everybody. So the movie opens pretty much with him biking around the neighborhood, and everyone's like, hey, what's up? They just like, hey, Little Mayor. They know him. He's the neighborhood kid always trying to do the right things. But him and his friends come across some the craziest thing you could possibly expect in the Bronx, I would say. Not gangbangers, nothing like that, but they come across a group of vampires. So him and a group of his friends, they're basically fighting for the Bronx, fighting against vampires and gentrification. So it's a really good, really, really interesting twist. There's this real estate company buying up all the properties. They're buying everything up. People are also going missing. And him and his friends are kind of trying to get to the bottom of the whole mystery. Figure out what's going on while, of course, saving his favorite bodega, which has the one of the famous pop culture dudes right now, Desus from Desus and Mero. Or, sorry, I think I mixed up. That's Kid Mero. I think he's the one who's in the movie. And he's the guy working at the bodega, and they're trying to save the bodega, this neighborhood bodega. And if you're from New York, you know how important bodegas are. So it's a really cute movie. It's fun. It fits in the vibe of almost like the Goonies or the Monster Squad type thing. It's a really good movie overall.
It's funny you said the Goonies because, like, the moment, not even, like, an hour in, just, like, 15, 20 minutes in, I already got the Goonie vibes right away. I was just like, oh, my God, this is the Goonies. This is just, like, the Goonies all over again. And I just love it, you know, because it centers around Miguel and his friends, his two friends. And one of them happens to be a vampire expert because he's the biggest nerd ever. And you always have to have one of those in your friends. You have to, whether they're no zombies, witches, whatever, you have to have an expert on things. And that's what I appreciate, the fact that they mention, like, okay, vampires. And what also I liked about this movie is that, you know, you see other movies with vampires and zombies, and in that world, that doesn't exist. They're always just like, what is this? What is this? For this, vampires exist. You know, they exist. They're mentioned in Medium, in books, in movies. So they know the term. They're just like, it doesn't exist, whatever. So I appreciate that they're like, no, it exists in a different, like, medium. It might not be real, quote unquote, but it exists in a sense. And again, I love that because I don't see that much in movies. They don't do that much. They're always like, oh, it doesn't exist in this world. So
yeah. It's really cool. It's always, I think they call it breaking the fourth wall, basically. And that's a really cool thing to do because, like you said, there's so many films where we get characters experiencing, whether it's werewolves, vampires, zombies, or anything like that. And when these things kind of appear, no one really knows what to call them. So they're just kind of like, there's these creatures out there doing stuff. It's like as if pop culture doesn't exist in their world, but this film was very comfortable saying, no, pop culture is a thing. This is like an existing thing. We're familiar with what this thing can be. They shouldn't exist. Like, that's the part that's really funny because that's why people kind of don't believe him at first when he goes around telling people that vampires are taking over the neighborhood, because they're like, these things don't exist, but they only exist like in films and in media. So that you're right. That was really funny.
Yeah. And I love the references too. Like, you know, spoiler alert, they end up watching Blade in like the break room with the bodega because they're like, we need to learn how to, like, you know, take down these vampires. And it's not just Blade, you know, they also reference Salem's Lot. One of the kids is reading Salem's Lot, which happens to be a vampire story written by Stephen King. Even the girl Rita, you know, who teams up with them to help them, she's like kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know, like, she was the only one who believed him because she was just like, my grandmother prepared me for this my whole life. And that was like, oh, that's Buffy. That's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, she was like, I'm Haitian. Like, we know all about this. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a bit later on. But yeah, and they reference so many, even like they even reference a little bit of The Lost Boys. But we'll get into that reference later on. But oh god, I love this movie so much. Like, and yeah, like they do tackle vampires and gentrification, which again, I love the metaphor of the vampires. Like, instantly watching this movie, I was just like, ah, I get it. Vampires, they're a metaphor for gentrification. Yeah, like I like how they did that. That was a huge metaphor and I loved it. And of course they did show, like, you know, some hints of racism too, which cause in the movie, when they start realizing people gone missing, one of the characters, Tony, from the bodega, was just like, no one's going to care if they go missing because we're from the Bronx.
Yep.
And that statement is so true no matter where you're from. The Bronx, my area of Brooklyn, some parts of Queens. Like, if you're from, like, a really quote-unquote hooded area, as society labels it, no one cares if you're gone missing. They'll just label you as an, oh, whatever, a victim of this, a runaway, blah, blah, blah. And I like how they mentioned that. Like, it was subtle. You know, the vampires representing gentrification and racism. You know, like, I just love how they did that.
Yeah, and as big of a vampire fan as I am, they're, like, easily probably one of my favorite, I guess, like, non-existent creatures or whatever. They're easily one of my favorite, like, monster-type creatures. Like, if I always said if I had a choice, I'd be a vampire out of anything else because they just seem, you know, they stay fairly human. They just can't go out during the day. That's fine.
Oh, that's me too.
So, like, that would totally be my choice. But I've never, until this film, I've never kind of drawn that parallel of, like, how gentrification is, like, being a vampire. I've never drawn that parallel. That's kind of how I've always viewed it, but I've never drawn the parallel between that and the actual creature. So that was really interesting and I would say a really smart take for a film that's kind of, you know, kind of like a kid film. Because it's more a family film than anything else. It's not crazy bloody. It's not anything like that. I don't even think they really show blood for the most part in this movie. Yeah, it's probably like a few snippets here and there. But there's no like crazy gruesome violence. Bodies aren't being ripped in half or anything like that. So the movie is very family friendly, despite the kind of creatures that they're facing. And I really like that because it feels like something I can maybe show my nephews.
Yeah, same. Like, I definitely want to get my niece and nephew to watch this movie. They'll definitely appreciate it. But yeah, like, when you mentioned the parallel, like, it was so funny, you know, blood-sucking real estate. You know, that's why I found it funny. You know, real estate workers are bloodsuckers, you know, like, and we see it all the time in the news and people who have been relocated, you know, have to been pushed out. You know, their landlords cave in to whatever money they're given to, and then boom, that's it. So, again, I just love the metaphor. I loved it. Yeah. It's so clever and smart.
Yeah, and it is really smart. It's super smart. It's funny because, in a way, this movie has kind of paralleled with a lot of things that I've heard older people in, like, the neighborhoods I grew up in say. Like, you know, I'm just like you. So I'm born and raised from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I don't live in Brooklyn anymore, but I live in New York still. But I'm born and raised from Brooklyn. Grew up in what people would call lower income or the hood or whatever the hell you want to call it, whatever label they use. I just call it home, but whatever label they want to use in society and stuff like that. And I remember hearing a lot when I was a kid, I would always see, like, my father or my mom talking with, like, you know, other people in the neighborhood, because those neighborhoods have a strong sense of community, in my personal opinion. Like, there are still problems, but there's generally a strong sense of community. And I remember seeing my parents speak to older people who also live in the neighborhood. And people would always say things like, hey, man, one day they're just going to buy this all up. And as a kid, I never knew what the hell they meant. I had no idea what they meant. They would just always say, yeah, one day somebody's going to come through and buy all of this up and just kick us all out. And I was probably like 8 when I first started hearing that. But I've always heard that. Even I would say into my late teens, I heard that. And I just never really knew what they meant until people just started saying, well, they would buy it. Like, they're going to buy the neighborhood and you'll essentially be priced out of it. And I was like, how would that even work? But unfortunately, we got to see some sides of that, you know, staying in New York for the 30 years I've been alive now, 30 plus years I've been alive now. And you kind of see how it works a little bit. And it does feel very much like a vampire, just slowly draining, I would say, the existing life out of a neighborhood, because every neighborhood has life, whether you consider it the hood or consider it the Hamptons. Every neighborhood and every community has its own kind of life and its own kind of existence. And mm-hmm. if you're changing it entirely without taking into account the people who already exist there, then you're definitely sucking out life out of it. That's just my opinion. But yeah.
No, it's true. Definitely is true. And, you know, like, you see it. You see how it did change the Bronx, how Queens has changed so much. Yeah. Manhattan, you know, there's like a small part of, like, you know, Manhattan that's still Manhattan, that's still Harlem, you know. Yeah. And even in my area, I mean, I'm from Brownsville. You know, we still haven't been gentrified yet, but it's a yet, you know.
And, yeah, it's like it's coming.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all feel it. And it's scary. It really is scary. And it's sad. Because it's like, damn, okay. I didn't ask for this. I mean, we want the things to be better, but not like that, you know. And I love how they show that too in the movie, you know, like subtle things, like when they're walking around, and you see how Miguel's looking at all the storefronts that are closed and changing to things. Mm-hmm. Like one of them is changed to a butter store. Some place is turning into like some weird cafe. Even the bodega was selling like almond milk and hummus and all this stuff. And one of the kids were just like, the hell is this? What are you selling here? And it's little things like that. That's when you first notice the change. You're just like, oh, crap. Like, I already know what's coming. And I love the subtlety of that that they show in the movie. Like, it felt real. It was something real.
Yeah. And seeing it through a kid's eyes makes it more impactful. Because, you know, his mom was kind of like, well, you know, unlike Miguel, things change. It just kind of comes with it. And, of course, things do just change as you get older. The world around you changes. You change as well. But, you know, you notice it more in the world around you. So as a kid, you see it way differently. But when you see it kind of like in the way that he's seeing it, it's like, well, I'm still a kid, and then my home isn't even going to be my home, really, in possibly a few months to a year. God knows how long it would take them to just kind of buy everything. The scene that really cracked me up, too, was when, like you were mentioning about him seeing the different signs around the neighborhood for different storefronts. There was one for a store that said Bone and Thread, and the two guys were sitting in front of it who, like, kind of in the neighborhood, always playing, like, dominoes or something, just hanging out. And one of the guys is actually a comedian who's, like, stand-up stuff I actually like. His name is Chris Redd. He's hilarious. It made me laugh, actually, that he's from Chicago, but he's in a movie that's in New York. That was really funny to me. But also, the scene, the sign said Bone and Thread, and Miguel was just kind of staring at it, and they were looking at him, and they were like, oh, what's he looking at? And he looked at the sign. He was like, oh, that sign? Yeah, that's confusing, man. I'm not sure if this is a restaurant or a storefront. I mean, or like a clothing store. It was like, yeah, Bone and Thread. It just, I don't know what the hell to do with that. But stuff like that was just really, really funny. And really good peeks into, like, how the neighborhood was changing.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Like, you know how they always say, like, you know your neighborhood's changing when you see a Starbucks?
Yeah.
Once you see a Starbucks or, like, a Dwayne Reed, that's it.
Yep. That's it. You know what's coming next. You're going to see people jogging at 3 a.m. You know? It's all that stuff. But let's get into some of the more fun parts of it. Like, you know, Miguel loved his bodega. Like, do you have a relationship with any of the bodegas you ever lived near, or even one you live near currently? Do you have any kind of relationship or fun experiences there?
Not really experiences, but we do have one that's close by that's a family run. And, like, it's been there for years. It's, like, the whole family works there. And it's a generational bodega, and everybody goes there, and everybody knows everybody there. And, like, the store, like, inside the bodega, when you start ordering stuff, like, in front of the cashier, the owner, she will have pictures of some of the neighborhood's kids, and then you see them as they become adults, and then their kids, you know, and then everywhere. So that's how long that bodega's been around. So that's kind of like the one we have that's, like, been around for years, and it's, like, family-orientated. So if that ever went, everybody would just be like, the hell just happened?
Yeah, that sounds amazing to have photos of all the kids as kids and didn't know that there's even adults still, and they passed through from time to time. That's they must have been around for, what, like 20 plus years at least.
Yeah, it's family orientated. I think the owner now is the daughter of the former owner. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. What about
you? That's amazing. I remember I remember one bodega in particular that I was always like a big fan of when I was a kid. It was one I lived near when I lived in Queens. I lived in the story of Queens at one point. Mm-hmm. Me and my friends used to always, you know, walk to school in the morning. It being Queens, those walks were long as hell, but we would walk to school in the morning. And I just remember this one guy, whenever we stopped at this one store, my friend wanted to get a juice or something on the way to school. And it was this store was run by like a few Dominican people, Dominican family. They're really nice, really, really cool about everything. And I remember every morning when he would see us in there, he's like, I hope you guys are heading to school. He'd be like, yeah, of course you're heading to school. He'd be like, cool, you know, ring a ding ding, school bell ring. And he would make us laugh with that every morning. He'd just be like, make sure you go to school, man. Get your education. He would say that to like me and my friends literally every morning. I remember he was there. I'm not sure if he still works there because I haven't been to that store in a few years. But I remember him doing that every morning from pretty much for at least almost 6 years between all of junior high school and then halfway through like high school before I moved. He used to do that every morning and say good morning to us and be like, I hope you guys have a good day at school. Super nice guy and super nice family.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, because like, you know, when you grow up, with, like, especially in the Bronx, they always mention it too in the movie. Where they were like Tony, the owner of the bodega, was saying that how like he practically raised them, were always in there because he wanted to make sure that those kids stayed out of trouble, you know, either stay away from getting into the life of crime or, you know, getting, you know, whatever. And that's how it is over here too. You know, bodega owners are always the first one to look at the kids before they go to school and always watch out for them to make sure nothing happens and make sure that they stay focused on the right path. So that's how it be, you know. The ones in my area too, like they're also Dominican. They're Dominican as well. And I just loved it. I love how realistic that was too. Like it felt real as well. The way Tony was with the kids and how everybody knew each other. Like that's how it be. That's literally how it be in neighborhoods like that.
That's what it is. Like, and I love that they even like whether the people, some of the black people were like Eve, whether they were had some Hispanic descent or like descent of some sort, they were like, they're black people in the neighborhood too, because I know where I grew up, in a lot of places I grew up, there was a mix. It was always like black people and Hispanic people and probably like a little bit of everyone else, but like the majority of the neighborhoods were like heavily like Puerto Rican, Dominican, and then like black. So that's why a lot of his stuff, and even me saying bodega, like a lot of, I'm not Hispanic of any sort or like Latin or anything like that. I'm just like, I'm black. But I grew up around so many people like that, and that's how I even knew that people used to say bodega. Like, that was a thing, and my father used to say it, too, and I knew it was because of how many, like, the group of people that he hung around, and he even learned a little bit of Spanish himself, and I learned, like, very little, but like, I was always around these people, so many things in the movie kind of hit home properly, because I was like, oh, I grew up around a lot of people who were, like, other Puerto Rican or Dominican, so this stuff made perfect sense to me. Like, remember the scene where, after Miguel sees the dude Slim who gets eaten by the vampire, for like he was chasing him, and then the vampire, like he sees a vampire. I like the way he joked him. He's like, "Yo, Hamilton!" Like that was really funny to me for some reason. The guy had like a long trench coat.
Yeah,
and then the vampire like attacked him, and like I don't know what that was. He did him. Like, he was trying to like force him to do something with his mind.
Yeah, he charmed.
Is that what
that
was supposed to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get into the rules of vampires, but
cool. Yeah, we'll get into that because that was like a little confusing, but like okay, but yeah, when he was like charmed him or whatever, and then like you know he bit the guy and killed him or whatever and floated him up in the air, and then Miguel like ran away freaking out like, oh my god, it was a vampire! Like he ate the guy. They were like flying and everything, and then Tony and his friends were like, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, it's a vampire! Like it's crazy! Like dude just came out of nowhere, and then you know they saw him come in the store and he saw he didn't have a reflection, all of that stuff, and then he left. But then Miguel took his friends and Tony, all of them, back to the location to be like, hey, here's where it happened. And they were like, dude, there's nothing here. Like, you're making this up. There's nothing here. And he's like, no, I'm not making this up. The dude literally floated up in the sky. Like, we need to do something about this. And everyone kind of thought he was just kind of freaking out about things changing. And he's like, no, this is like an actual concern. Like, this is a problem. And even like you go back to what you were saying about people going missing, even the store owner said something. He was like, ain't nobody gonna miss Slim. And he was like, what do you mean? He's like, what are you saying that? Because he a gangbanger? He was like, no, because we're in the Bronx. And nobody care about the Bronx? And I was like, yeah, he got a point.
Yeah, it's true. Again, that part was so relatable because you see that all the time and everywhere. You're like, oh, no one cares, especially when it's like primarily like black and brown communities. Yeah, society does not care what happens. And that, like, that also really hit home. Like, that was like really like, wow. You know, I mean, yeah, they kind of like kind of made it into a joke, try to make it all funny, but like, it was real. That's a real thing.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation.
Now, I'm just saying, I love Tony.
Oh, yeah, Tony was great. I just want to highlight one thing before we even talk about Tony a little bit more. They called Blade the greatest vampire hunter of all time, and I was like, that's how I view him, too. That is how I view Blade as well. I was like, not only is that film...
Blade would not be Blade. Yeah, Blade would not be Blade if it wasn't for Wesley Snipes, for what he did with that role.
Yes.
Like, Wesley Snipes is Blade. I don't care what anybody says, what everybody thinks. Nah, Wesley Snipes is Blade. Yeah, it's like Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman will always be Wolverine. You cannot separate the two. Like, Wesley Snipes is Blade, no matter what. Like, yes, he did other films. He did other films, but he's always going to be known as Blade. For me, he's always Blade to me. Like... he's Blade. That's it. Period.
I agree. Blade is the shit. That's still one of my favorite movies of all time, let alone one of my favorite vampire films of all time.
I know. I love it. Because back in the day, I didn't even know that was like... because this is like when I just started getting into comic books, and I had no idea Blade was a Marvel character. I had no idea until like years later. Same. And I was just like, oh, crap. So he's definitely one of my favorite characters. Like... so he began to become one of my favorite characters from Marvel. Like, he's so intricate and so interesting. Like, I just love everything about him.
Yeah, he's great. We definitely want to review that movie at some point. So, let's not spill all the beans on that one.
Yeah, I love how they call themselves the Daywalkers, too. Like, they're like, we're like, what? We're going to be like the Daywalkers? Yeah! Like, they feel so empowered by that.
Yeah, I love how, like, knowledgeable their friend was, and you mentioned it already, but I love how knowledgeable their friend was, the Puerto Rican Harry Potter, as Slim called him.
Yeah, because he knew everything. I forgot what his name was, and he was just like, Luis.
Oh yeah, Luis.
He was like, Luis, tell me everything you know about vampires. And you saw like Miguel like writing all the notes.
Yeah.
Everything.
I love that. It was so cute. It was so fun. And, like, I love that kid. He was, like, so he just knew literally everything. And that's actually one thing I want to highlight as well, is how intricate his pop culture knowledge was on, like, the top, on like not just vampires, but just, like, kind of everything. Like, anything they would ask him about stuff, he just knew stuff. I want to highlight that because, you know, a lot of times, despite the fact that, for the short term, black and brown people, you generally don't see in a lot of these roles or a lot of science fiction or a lot of, like, things that kind of step outside of, like, you know, just their normal life of struggling. Like, most of the films that you see about, like, people from these places tend to be about them struggling. About, like, whether it's, like, they can't pay the bills or whatever racism they're facing. Like, that pretty much tends to be, in my opinion, almost 90% of the films that you see these kind of people in.
Mm-hmm.
Us, even despite not being in, like, science fiction, a lot of these things, we know this shit. Like, and Louise was a perfect example of it. Like... Salem Lot, I have not read that book, but I doubt there are people like that, like him in that book. Have you ever read the book?
I briefly read it. They made a movie about it too, a movie adaptation, I believe, of it. And
are there any like Hispanic characters in it or anything like that?
Nah.
And that of course, that's crazy, but even aside from that being crazy, despite us not even directly being represented in a lot of these forms of media, we love these things, so we know these things. And that's, I love that Luis was a perfect example of that. Like, that was so cool to me.
He was blurred.
Yeah. Because I'm that kid, too. I was that kid, too. I love all of the stuff with creatures, vampires, all of that stuff, science fiction. I still love all that stuff to this day. Even though I didn't see myself in a lot of those things, it was like, I'm going to watch it because I like vampires. I like werewolves. I like all of that crazy stuff.
And to get into it, yeah, like, you don't see that represented much. And when it does, even when you see it in your own society, like, it's such an eternal struggle where, like, if you know someone who's into that, right away someone's going to be like, oh, you're into that white crap. You're into that white shit. It's just like, no. It's not just to white people. Like, do you not know that other people of color write stuff? Like, you read anime, you watch anime, and you read manga. Who wrote that? White people? No. Asian. What are Asians? People of color. Like, come on. You know?
You're right.
You're into, you know, Black Panther. You know, I mean, Black Panther was created by a white guy, but he was the first black comic book. And then you have, like, Milestone Comics, which is a black-owned.
Yep.
Comic world, you know, and that's black owned. So it's just like, it's not just set to white people. We all love that stuff. It's a blur thing. And I love that they did that with Luis, that he's the biggest freaking nerd in pop culture. Like, even when Miguel was just like, oh yeah, and we'll stake the vampires in the head. And he was just like, no, that's zombies. You hit them in the chest. And I love when he corrected him on that. I'm just like, oh, that's me. I'm that person. I'm that nerd that's ready for the zombie apocalypse. I'm like that, yeah. I'm ready.
Were any of the rules about killing vampires, like, did they feel new to you or, like, original or just utilized in a way you didn't anticipate before?
No, I kind of all knew it. I all knew. It was the rules and, yeah, like, the holy water, the stakes, the crosses, the garlic. I did like how they used the, oh, my God, like, the... I forgot what you call it, the thing that Luis took that the Catholics put in your mouth.
Oh, what they call it? You brisket or something like that? I forgot what they call it.
Yeah, I forgot what it's called, but like that was new to me. That was interesting that he used that. That he was just like, yeah, because that's blessed, we could use that. And he used it and the vampire just blew up. I was just like, wow. That was also kind of a reference to Blade. Because that happened in one of the Blade movies where he just like sprayed holy water in their mouth and they just like, their heads just blew up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the holy water bubbling was something I've never seen before.
That's only like, I feel like that's only hinted in certain vampire movies and stories. Like, that's not like a main thing. Because I've heard that when it comes to like, you know, like Supernatural, like where they reference that if like a demon's near or whatever. But, That was pretty cool, yeah. Like, that was kind of new to me, but I kind of didn't know about it. But it's something that's not really highlighted that much.
Oh, so that's something that's, like, in the lore?
Yeah.
And
I also loved the whole thing when they said the how vampires cannot enter a room unless they're invited in.
Yeah, I missed that.
And that's a really big thing. Yeah, and I love how they caught that, one of the characters. They're just like, oh, she can't come in because you didn't invite her in. Don't let her in.
Yeah, that was really well done. And I like how the vampires are kind of trying to get around that by just buying up all the property.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, vampires.
That was really smart. I've never even heard of... I've seen small examples of that, but I've never seen it in a way where vampires leverage that as a reason to do like real estate, which sounds goofy, but I've never seen it leverage like that. The only example of something kind of close to that I've seen was maybe in like I think it was like a random episode of Vampire Diaries. It was something like that, because something happened in the show and one of the characters who was a vampire but owned the property, signed over the deed to a different vampire, and that then allowed the vampire to be able to enter the house to help them do something. But that's like the only example of anything I've ever seen like that, where they actually utilize the property to kind of get around the entry things. I remember Buffy used to do that too, right?
I think so. I think they also did that in I think in True Blood also, they did that once, but they bought Sookie's house. I forgot who bought her house. But someone bought her house and that gave them entry just to enter whenever the hell they wanted to.
Yeah, it's a really cool part of vampire. Well, list of stories of vampires. I know there's so many iterations of vampires throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. They're always changing. And, you know, again, like, I love how this movie references, like, all the classic vampires. Like, even the name of the real estate. You know, that's a nod to Nosferatu, which was the other name for Dracula. Like, the logo alone is Dracula. Like, that was clever, you know? And of course, Blade, they mentioned Blade, Salem's Lot, and, you know, as I mentioned before, like, Lost Boys. You know, they reference a bit of Lost Boys
in a
certain scene. So it's like when they went to, like, kind of, like, to find the nest, and they saw them hanging upside down.
Oh, yeah.
And they went to, like, that's when Lost Boys, that happened in Lost Boys, when they found the nest and they were going to kill all the vampires. That's just like in Lost Boys.
I forgot all about that. I haven't seen Lost Boys in a very long time.
So I was just like, I got so excited when I saw that. I was like, oh, it's Lost Boys. So, what is it? And of course, Rita. I loved Rita. Like, oh my God. She, again, when she said, when she knew about the whole vampire thing, that she believed him. And she was just like, my grandmother has prepared me for this my whole life. And she knew everything about vampires. Even so, they didn't even know. They're like, you don't know this? And I was just like, she's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Oh, my God. She is the Buffy of Bronx.
Yeah. I remember the scene where they went to their nest and they took photos of vampires in their coffins and stuff like that. And they got away. And the cops eventually got a hold of them. And they were saying, what proof do you have of any of this being real? And they tried to show the video footage of the vampires. And everyone's like, bro, we don't see nothing. It's empty. What are you talking about? And then Rita was the only one who was like, well, vampires don't have souls. And everyone just kind of looked at it like, one, you believe him? And then also they were kind of like, how the hell would you know that? Like, that was kind of how people looked at her. And she was like, they don't have souls, which means they don't have reflections. And you can't catch them on camera or video or anything like that. And I was like, she's right. Like, even if you don't believe in vampires, she is right. Like, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
She was a great character. The only thing I wish they would have did with her was, like, I wish they had kind of showed her fighting.
Yeah.
Because she seemed to be prepared for that, too. Like, when she came to meet them near the end, where they actually went to the nest to kill everybody, she came and she was like, well, thank you for the invite. And they were like, sorry. And then a guy just handed her a weapon and was like, here, thank you for coming. Because he wanted to avoid, like, the argument. But she didn't even take it. She seemed to have, like, daggers or something on her.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah, like, I don't even notice. Like, it was, like, silver dagger she had, like, on her hip. And I was just like, yo, she's prepared. She knew what she was doing. She was like, I was ready for this. I was raised for this moment right here and then. And I was just like,
yeah, now we just need, like, a mini series about her family.
Yo, I would be down for that. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I love her. I was just like, that's Buffy. She's Buffy. Ugh, Rita,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, she came prepared. She was locked and loaded.
Freaking love Rita. I want to be her best friend. I'll feel safe with Rita. I'll be really safe with her. Yeah, and I love how the boys looked at her and she was just like, I'm Haitian. You know, like, we believe in this stuff. And I love that because, like, yeah, in the Caribbean, we have so many urban legends. We have so many ghost stories in the freaking the Caribbean. It's not even funny. So I love when she mentioned that. I was just like, yep, Caribbeans. We're all superstitious. We know about
Are you Caribbean as well?
Yeah, I'm Puerto Rican. That's Caribbean.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. We're very superstitious. I'm very superstitious. Like, I'm super, super superstitious. I don't play that game.
Well, that I know. Because one of my childhood friends I grew up with, me and him are still good friends to this day, he's Puerto Rican. Well, half Puerto Rican. But, yeah, whatever, Puerto Rican. And his mom's Puerto Rican as well. And she told me some of the scariest stories in my goddamn life. When we were, like, 12 or 13, she would just randomly tell us stories about stuff. Like, we'd be just sitting in the room joking about something or... And she just kind of come in and be like, do you know about something? Or she'll tell my friend not to do something and it'll be based on something. She'll be like, yeah, don't do this. You know, I told you not to do this because of this thing. And then I'd be like, what is this thing you're talking about? Like, I've never heard of this. And then she would end up telling me like this story about like some, whether it's a ghost story or some myth or something or some cultural reference from Puerto Rico. And I'll be like, I've never heard this before, but this is terrifying.
Yeah, there's a lot of terrifying stories. I'm just like...
She's how I heard about, La Llorona? Is that how you say it?
La Llorona? Yeah.
La Llorona, yeah. She's how I know about that story because she told me that story.
Yeah, La Llorona, I can't roll my R. That's how you know I'm Puerto Rican. Puerto Ricans don't roll their R's. We sound Jewish when we're trying to roll our R's. That folklore is like, folklore has been traveled around the whole entire world. I don't even know where it originated. No one knows where it really originated. Like, some people say it originated in Mexico. Some people say it originated in Spain. No one knows where it came from. We just know that it happened. People tell the story and it circulates all around. But yeah, like, again, like, I appreciate that. Like, I loved her character, Rita. You know, I just love when she mentioned that. She's just like, I'm Haitian. We believe in this stuff. And they're just looking at her like, oh, crap. Okay.
They were just like, yeah, we'll take your word for it. Like, okay.
I love this movie.
I told you it was going to be worth watching. From the moment I watched it, I was like halfway through it when I hit you up and was like, we got to review this at some point. This movie is too much fun. And it felt so New York, which is one of my favorite things ever. Like, it's always great to see, like, you know, your home reflected in media. It just is. Like, I'm not from the Bronx per se, but I have friends who live in the Bronx. I've lived in the Bronx for a little while at some point in my life. Like, it was nice to see it all kind of reflected in some way. Whether it's just kids on the bike, people outside playing dominoes, or just sitting outside enjoying the view. Like, all of that stuff, in my opinion, it's somewhere universal from neighborhood to neighborhood. I've lived in Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Manhattan. I've been in pretty much all the boroughs. I don't count Staten Island.
No one does. So, no one does.
Exactly. So knowing that, I'm just like, yeah, these, you see similarities between all of these places. It's just people living normal lives, trying to have a good time and with the simplest means possible. And I love that. This film totally reflected that.
Did you know? Well, okay, so one of the characters, we find that that they're like the leader of the whole vampires.
Oh, the commander?
Did you know? Yeah, did you know that that character was the head when you first saw them, or were you just like shocked when it was revealed?
I didn't assume she was a leader because, to tell you the truth, the way the film was kind of flowing, I didn't think the commander was a big deal. Mm-hmm. The film it bounces between just the fact like whether or not vampires were there. So getting that part out of the way was like, I would say, a journey in of itself within the story. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they hid the commander throughout like 80% of the film. You're just kind of like, I don't know who it is. But it's not focused on so heavily that I'm trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm more so just like, oh, I wonder how these kids are going to resolve the situation. But did I assume it was going to be the white lady? I didn't. I'm sure if I'd have thought about it, I probably would have assumed so. I know one of my friends always jokes, and he's just, and even Louise said it. He was like, that white lady is bad news. And that scene made me laugh so hard because I was like, I bet he's right. Because this is literally the only white person you see walking around this neighborhood. Throughout the entire film, there are really no white people walking around in this neighborhood at all. So, and even then, like, I would say, one, you only really saw her at night. So that was kind of a little bit of a giveaway. You only really saw her at night. Which would probably be like the weirdest time I would expect to see like a random white lady in those neighborhoods in particular, because it's not fully gentrified yet, or at least not gentrified enough yet. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily expect that. So I assumed something was kind of up. I just didn't think it was her. I didn't even consider if it was her or not. How about you?
I knew right away she was a vampire. Like, I didn't think she was the commander. So I was like really wondering too, like, who was the commander, but I knew she was a vampire right away. I was just like, oh, she's a vampire. I know it already. She's too nice. She's too nice and friendly. She's just like, hi, I'm Vivian. Just want to get to know my neighbors. I'm just like.
it's that Get Out syndrome. You know, remember how nobody really thought that the lady in Get Out was a villain until the end of the film?
Oh, God. That movie was traumatizing.
Yeah, I feel like it's the same thing here. You're kind of not supposed to really assume much unless you know you've seen these kind of films or just like don't mind accusing her of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't really think much of it until like, you know, moments kind of pop up, especially when she like killed Tony. I was like, oh, that sucked. I wanted Tony to live.
I know. I was sad. I was just like, that bitch. Hope she dies. Tony. And the thing too, like, I love how like whenever she did show up, the people would question her like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I just moved into the neighborhood. And they'd be like, the Bronx? Really? Why? And, you know, she's just being like, why does everybody ask that? I'm like, well, you're white. You're blonde. This is a primarily black and brown neighborhood. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you here?
And the Bronx is a commute. It is not convenient. It is a commute.
Yeah. I traveled once to my friend's house. And she lives, like, deep Bronx. That was like a 4-hour train ride. I'm being dead ass.
Oh yeah, because yeah, you're right. That would be like a 4-hour train
yeah,
ride.
Yeah, because I live deep East New York. That's like the almost last stop on the 3 train. So yeah, that was a dick. I got home and she was just like, "Oh my god, that was like 4 hours." I was like, "I told you it was far. No one believes me." Every time when I tell people I live dumb far, you're like, "Oh, it's not that far." I'm like, "Nah, it took 4 hours."
Yeah, that's a commute like a motherfucker. That's far as hell.
Yeah, so I would question too if somebody came to my neighborhood like that. I'm like, why?
I'd be like, unless there was a good reason, I wouldn't understand. Like, hell, I had a friend I used to visit in the Bronx, and that commute for me was almost 2 hours on a train. Just like, I would sleep most of it. So I was like, this is a long train ride. But you know, that's New York life. It's getting from one borough to the next. It feels like a damn plane ride.
It does. That's why when people ask, do you travel? I guess train. 4 hours. That's us traveling.
Yeah.
But
oh, I wanted to ask you, I was thinking this while I was watching the film. I've seen a lot of vampire films. You maybe seen just as many as me, if not more. Mm-hmm. I can't recall seeing many vampire films where they use familiars. Like, is this the first one you could think of where they did that, or are there other ones?
Blade did that. Blade.
Oh yeah, Blade did do that. I forgot all about
Blade
that.
Blade did that, and all the whole trilogy did that. They always mention familiars because yeah, like they're human servants. They're either they're either cops, they're either lawyers or whatever, or bodyguards.
Yes, I forgot all about that.
Or blood donors, like, yeah, they're familiars. So they did, they mentioned that a lot in Blade.
Oh man, I was, because when I was thinking, watching this movie, sitting there thinking, I was like, man, I don't recall people really mentioning it. I mainly, honestly, when I think of the term, I think of the Castlevania games. I know they mention it a lot in there. But I was like, I can't really remember the last time I've seen this in the film. I guess it's not often. I don't see it often in many films.
Yeah, because like, at least for Blade, I think only mentioned it once or twice. And he doesn't mention it a lot. And I guess as a viewer, you just assume, okay, like, they're just this or just that, you know, whatever. But yeah, like, he just mentioned it like a couple of times in that one. But that's where I first heard the term familiars. I'm not really sure anywhere. I mean, yeah, Castlevania mentions that also in the anime series too. But but yeah, anywhere else I don't really recall. You know, even in the classic like Dracula movies, they don't really mention familiars. It's just vampires and, you know, the brides or whatever. You don't really see familiars. So it was kind of interesting to mention that. And I love how what is it? Who was that first mentioned it? Was it Rita or was it Luis?
Luis. Luis,
okay, yeah. So he was one that mentioned
it. It was Luis. He mentioned it after they got caught, after they realized when the guy came out. Remember when Miguel was like, if he comes back out here, we'll give him back everything that we stole from him. And then he just walked outside. And then later, Luis called him and was like, he was probably a familiar. And he was like, what's that? And he explained it to him. And he was like, yeah, they're basically humans. They're human servants for vampires with the hope of becoming vampires one day.
It makes sense, too. You know, like, I mean, it's real estate. You have to be available in the morning, you know, not just nighttime. So it makes sense for them to have someone. And I like how also, like, their servants were also kind of like the cops and even some of the, you know, the gang members too were also kind of familiars. They were also doing their dirty work for them.
I liked how they paralleled the stories of him kind of getting into, like, random issues with, like, the gangbangers in the neighborhood. And Bobby, that was his name, Bobby.
Yeah.
So how they were paralleling him getting into the gang issues in the neighborhood with Frank being like a familiar to the vampires. Like, they didn't show much of like Frank kind of doubting whether or not he wanted to be down with them, but they did that a lot with Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, the gang members in the neighborhood were kind of trying to get him, whether it was do errands or do random things, and his friends were kind of like, dude, don't do it. His mom was also like, we need to move so that you don't get involved in these things like your father did and all of that stuff. But I liked how at the end they kind of paralleled it when Fred was going to stop them from leaving the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, yo, man, you think you're going to be like them, but you ain't never going to be like them. Even if they turned you into one of them, you're just going to be their little brother. You're just going to be like basically their bitch. So I wouldn't recommend you do that. And then he kind of was just looked at him and was like, that's what's up. Which I thought was a weird line, but kind of funny. I didn't expect him to reply like that, but I was like, all right, cool. He gets it. And he was like, just leave. And they left. And I kind of liked that. It was a good way to tie. They didn't spend as much time on Fred, so you can get whether or not he doubted his decision. But I did like how they kind of tied that together.
Frank. His name was Frank.
Frank. Sorry, Frank. Yeah, there it goes. Frank.
Yeah.
I like how they tied it together.
I liked it too, yeah, because he was hoping. He even asked Vivian, who the commander was, like, oh,
yeah.
Do you want to, can I, when's my gift, you know? Yeah, because all he wanted was return to a vampire. And yeah, like, I love how Bobby told him, he's like, it's never going to happen. You're just going to be their servant forever, for all eternity. They live forever.
Yeah.
That's all you're going to be. And
yeah, he was like, even if they did turn to you, they still wouldn't respect
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. It was smart. Yeah, I loved Bobby too. Like, I love, and again, like, back to them showing the realism of the movie itself. Like, yes, there's vampires, but taking the vampires away, they really did show a real struggle. Because I see all the time too, parents are always want to like move their kids out to keep them away from the life, because it's everywhere. It's everywhere in every corner. So like, I like that. I like how they showed that for Bobby and his mom, and how she always mentioned like, oh, I don't want you to be like your dad. I don't want you to do this and that. And that used to stick, like, you could see in his face. Like, it used to hurt him when she used to tell him that. And of course, you know, you're a kid. You don't want to hear that. You know, you're getting yelled at. You're just like, I don't want to hear this, but whatever. But, like, she was kind of, like, looking out for him. And yes,
of course,
yes, you know, the parents were yelling, but I mean, that's how parents are, especially in that area, in any area. That's how it is. You know, that's how it is. Like, that's their way of showing how much they care.
Yep.
Yes.
That's accurate. I forgot where I remember reading before, and not even for this movie, but in general, somebody said it really well. I can't remember who it was that I was reading. But someone was talking about the way just different parents communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You were just like, you know, in lots of, you can say like white families or stuff like that, or higher privilege, but I guess you could more so say white families who just like tend to be like maybe upper middle class or whatever. They tend to, obviously not all, but some of them tend to communicate with a softer tone at times because they feel like their children, not consciously or not really, kind of unconsciously, they feel that their kid has a chance to make more mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of comfortable with allowing their kid to make the mistakes necessary to learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, kids who grow up in like lower income areas or lower income neighborhoods, however you want to phrase it, their parents tend to communicate with a tone that is slightly more urgent and more quick because they feel their kid society won't give their kid as many chances to fuck up.
Yeah.
And you can see that from the parents in the movie, because it's like the parents love them. None of these kids were like going home to like terrible families, which is great because that's nice to see for once. That's like not like Nightmare on Elm Street where every parent was an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's nice. All the parents here were like, you know, loving. They cracked a few jokes. His mom made some of the girls laugh at Miguel because she was like, "You ain't cleaning your dirty underwear." Like, that was really funny. Well, of course, something you don't want to hear as a kid, but it's like if you would have cleaned it up, you wouldn't have had to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like all the parents are pretty loving. Yeah, even Bobby's mother, she was just like, "I don't want you to end up like your father." Of course, the way she was saying it sometimes sounded like she was damn near like blaming him, but she's like, "Nah, I just don't want you to end up like that. So I'm doing, if they want to buy this property, I'll sell it so we can get out here just so you can avoid ending up in these situations." And that's what I think any good parent would want to do. You know, it's a double-edged sword to that, right? Like, you're happy that you got like a huge sum of money, now you can leave and like start a new life. But then another part of it is like you kind of leaving behind what you established to then start that new life. So it's mm-hmm. It's sad and happy at the same time.
Yeah, because I know when my friend said that, like she left. She was just like, "I don't want to raise my kids here." And she went and left. She's like, "I have a better life." Because that's how it is.
Don't blame
her. You
know,
that's how it is. And, you know, again, like that's real. You know, that's what I appreciate about this movie is that they showed real feelings, real struggles. You know, it was real. It's not like how, I mean, yeah, some could say, well, we see in other movies, like, yeah, but it's exaggerated. They exaggerate the truth.
Yeah.
They exaggerate it way too much where it's just like, okay, this is just like being racist. Like, stop it. You know, you're just being racist. But this one, it felt human. You know, it felt natural because I see this all the time. I'm sure you've seen it all the time. Like, I see it all the time. So, yeah. So, I appreciate that. I liked it. And I like how, in the end,
same.
Bobby did make the decision to be like, yeah, I'm not going to be this. I'm going to be my friends because they've always been there for me. And I like how he made that very grown decision. Because he was about to, just be like, okay, fine. But then he was just like, no, this isn't for me. This is not my life.
Another funny thing I want to comment on in this movie, on a lighter note, is that the last person I expected to be a pastor would be Method Man.
I did not expect him. I was surprised. I was just like, what is he doing here?
I love how every time he saw the kids, he was always like, "Yo, y'all need to stay good." And he'd look at Bobby and be like, "You better make sure you stay on the straight and narrow." Like, he always knew they were all up to no good, but he was also looking at Bobby like, "Man, you hanging out with known drug dealers. You need to work, figure that out.
You need Jesus."
He was like, "I'm watching you."
He's like, "You need Jesus."
Yeah, he was hilarious. I love the scene in the church where they stole the holy water. That was.
He's like, "Those little shits stole my mount, my 7-Up."
Yeah, he's like, "They stole my Sprite, man." And I love you at the end when they finally, you know, they killed most of the vampires. The last one left was pretty much Vivian, and she was attacking them, and she was like, "Yeah, nobody cares about the shithole of the Bronx." And that dude screamed, "Yo, what the fuck you said about the Bronx?" Yo, I laughed so hard.
Like, you just called us a shithole?
Did you call the Bronx a shithole? Yeah. And the whole neighborhood standing out there?
And the pastor, with the big-ass cross. And he hits her, and he's like, "Ooh, that's ugly."
Oh, that was so good. And I love, of course, you gotta say when the girl threw the Tim at her. Yo, I fell on my bed. I laughed so fucking hard.
She was dead ass. She was dead ass.
I love they was hitting her with, trying to hit her with brooms, sticks, bats, all this stuff. The most effective thing was the Tims.
She even looked at her. She looked at the Tim and looked at her like, what? And I'm just like, yo, she was dead ass. It's like, you know how like in 300 the guy was like the Sparta? I swear to God, I bet in her head when she threw that book, she was like, I'm dead ass, and threw it.
That was so good. I swear, I was joking with Anastasia when I was watching. I was thinking, man, I'm pretty sure they put a mannequin in there to get hit with them Tims, because Tims hurt.
They do. They do. You can't
just be throwing Tims at
actors. That platform at the end, yo, that's heavy. The Tims are heavy as hell, man. They is heavy.
Oh, that movie was so good. That scene had me cracking up. The whole neighborhood jumped the vampire. That was so Bronx or so New York. That was so good.
They came together as a community, yeah. And it's just like, oh my God. But I just loved that. That scene was just my favorite part. I was just like, oh my God. This is so freaking New York. This is so deep.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I honestly know they ain't say anything about sequels, nothing like that, but I kinda hope they do a sequel in some way. Like, but I hope in my ideal world, a sequel for this film would be like random different neighborhoods that people kinda just don't like think about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it don't got to be New York. It could be just like anywhere in the world where it's like neighborhoods that people probably don't think about that just seem pretty like minor. That don't even mean low income or anything. That just means like just neighborhoods that kind of just aren't like the most popular parts of cities or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like that versus like werewolves or something, or like the swamp creatures or something. Like, I would love to see tons of iterations or something like this.
That's amazing though. I can see the Queens versus swamp creatures, but they're next to the water. Queens is really next to the water. They're literally there next to the water.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, but like, oh God, I just love this movie. This movie is awesome. Like, but that scene with the girl, I was like laughing. I was just like, of course she threw a fucking Tim. Of course. I'm surprised she wasn't wearing a New York Yankee hat.
Oh, man. That was so good. This movie was great. I really hope we get more films like this in the future.
Yeah.
This is just fun. This is good all-around family fun. Whether you're from New York or not, you should enjoy this film. This is just, it just adds something special when you are from New York and the references hit different. But it's a fun film, man. And I applaud them for making this.
Yeah. And again, like, I hope we do get, if we don't get a sequel, then hopefully we get a spinoff of Rita. I want a spinoff of Rita. That's what I want, at least. I want to get a whole spinoff movie or series just on Rita. To be like, what the hell did her grandma train her for? Like, like, damn.
That could be a fun series. It's like her when she's a little bit older and now she's like a monster hunter of some sort. And she's always talking about the lessons that her grandmother told her. That could be fun.
That's just like
it's like a limited series.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. Hopefully she brings her friend with the Tims. They could use her. Use her as a boomerang. I mean, hey, and I also like when Miguel and them, they're Dominican and Puerto Rican. So as a Latina, we all know the story and fear the chancla. So I love when, like, Tony was going to bring Miguel home. He was just like, your mom is going to beat your ass, and then she's going to be my ass. And then I'm a grown man, but I don't want that chocolate to my face. I'm going to be very embarrassed. And I was just like, same. No one wants that. Everyone fears the chocolate. That's the equivalent to the Tim for us. That's the equivalent to Tim's for us. Like, you don't want to get hit with the chocolate, man. Like, sure.
I've seen my friend get chased with a few. I know. His mom had deadly accuracy. She hit me a few times. I know. It was not a game. I was like, where did I even come from? It's like it fell from the sky sometimes. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Oh, but that's great. Let's let's get out of here.
Deadass. Oh,
man, until next time, guys.
Yeah. You're...
You're...